Go ahead, Sean.
All right. I will call to order this online public meeting. It is October 7th, 2020. My name is Sean Denniston, and I'm the chair of the Historic Preservation Commission for Clark County. You should be able to see tonight's meeting agenda on your screen. If you can't see the screen, I'll be announcing the agenda items as we move through the meeting topics. Due to the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic, regular meetings and public hearings of the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission will be held in a virtual meeting room. This will allow for safe participation by commission members, staff, and any citizen interested in attending. Members of the public and applicants have joined as an attendee, which means you can see and hear the event if you joined via computer or mobile device, or you can just hear the event if you joined by phone. Other event participants cannot see your video and cannot hear your audio unless you are acknowledged by the commission chair or staff and are unmuted. This evening's agenda is planned as follows. The roll call and introductions, minutes approval, public comment period, public hearing for the nomination to the Heritage Register of the Dubois or Dubois Motor Building, depending on what part of the country you come from. Committee updates from the Demolition Committee, old business, including a review of the Camas Interpretive Panels, new business, including the Clark County Historic Museum Lecture Series sponsorship and the Vancouver Code Revision update, and we will adjourn. So I understand we have a suggestion that we move the demolition discussion until after all of the Clark County Historic Museum discussions so that they can go home. Do we have a motion?
This is Don Trost. I so move.
And that was Michelle with the second?
Yes.
All right. So moved and seconded. Do we need any discussion? Give you the opportunity. All right. Let's go ahead and take the roll call vote. So Jackie, I believe that's you.
Okay, sorry. I'm taking notes too, so I've got multiple screens happening. Let's start. Angie Gray.
Aye.
Don Trost.
Aye.
Feli Garcia.
Aye.
Greg Fuse.
Here.
Julie Baum.
Here.
Michelle Kapitanovich.
Muted.
Are we taking attendance or are we voting on the motion? I'm unclear.
We're voting on the motion.
That's what I thought. Okay, yes.
Oh. And Sean Denniston.
Aye. And yeah, we probably did that a little bit out of order. So it passes. We'll rearrange the agenda. I think we can count that for roll call for the commissioners as well, since everyone voted on that one. So let's go ahead and go through staff and any participants. So Jackie, can you lead us off?
Sure. This is Jackie Camp with Clark County Community Planning.
And I'm Sharon Lumbon-Tobin with Clark County Community Planning.
Jason Nortz, City of Vancouver, Community and Economic Development.
Mark Person, Senior Planner, City of Vancouver.
And then I believe that's everyone. So our next item is the minutes approval. I did just send, I realized that I sent a little bit late. There was just a little orphan. There was a few words that didn't lead into a sentence that needed to be removed. Is there any other edits that need to be made? Then I will entertain a motion to approve or otherwise.
I'll move that. This is Michelle. I'll move that we approve the minutes from our September 2nd meeting.
Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Second, Andy.
All right, Michelle moved and Don seconded. Don Trost seconded. So go ahead, Jackie, can you take the roll call votes?
Yep. Andy Gray?
I think you might have been muted, Andy.
Hi.
Don Trost?
Hi.
Kelly Garcia?
Aye.
Greg Hughes?
Yes.
Julie Bond?
I don't know if you heard me. I said aye.
Thank you. Michelle Kapitanovich?
Yes.
And Sean Denniston?
So the motion passes unanimously. We'll now take public comment on any items not on the agenda. Please keep remarks brief and to the point. You'll have 3 minutes to speak. We do have a couple people on our attendee list, so let's go ahead and check if any of them would like to give public comment. Sharon, well, actually, it'll be Jackie this time. Or is it Sharon? One of them will provide instructions on how to make public comment for those joining through their computer mobile device and for those joining by telephone.
Okay, let me pull up the slide for a moment. Sorry. Sorry, I have so many screens on here. And I'm pulling up the directions for public comment. Okay. Okay, so for attendees using their computers or the WebEx application, if you'd like to speak, please utilize the raised hand icon. You can do this by opening the participant window. It's the round participant icon at the bottom of the screen and select the hand icon in the lower right-hand portion of the screen. Staff will only acknowledge those attendees during the public comment period who have a raised hand by selecting the hand icon. When you're acknowledged, you'll be unmuted. If you wish to be a party of record or to challenge or defend a decision, please state and spell your name for the record. For attendees just using the phone audio option, you need to press *3 on your phone to raise your hand. You'll hear a message that says you raised your hand. To ask a question, please wait to speak until the host calls on you. When you're acknowledged, you'll be unmuted and you'll hear a message that says you have been unmuted. When you finish your comment, press *3 to lower your hand. You'll hear a message that says you've lowered your hand. So I will see if any attendees have any hands raised. We have 3 attendees and I'm not seeing any hands. So I think we can move forward. Oh, Carrie, right. Sorry. Carrie has a little hand there. Okay. So what do I do? Unmute Carrie. Okay, there we go. Carrie, can you hear us? Let me see if I can. Carrie, are you there?
It looks like Carrie might be on twice.
Yeah.
Might try the other one.
Might need to unmute her other.
Carrie, can you hear me?
Sharon, try unmuting the other Carrie.
Are there 2 Carries?
Yeah.
She's got, I have her under the attendee list, right? Oh, there's another one I see, sorry.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me now?
Hi, Carrie. Sorry.
You can.
Oh,
yes.
Hi. Sorry, I was on my work computer and I could not figure out how to get any sound going.
That's
so
okay.
I'm on my phone now. I just wanted to say thank you so much to the Historic Commission and to Brad for even considering doing the historic panels for downtown Camas. We're absolutely thrilled. We are so excited about what Brad has come up with and what the group has come up with. And we just couldn't be happier. We've been wanting these for many, many years. So I just wanted to say kudos to you guys. Yay, Brad. So happy to work with all of you. And if there's any information at all that you can use from us, the DCA, we are here to work with you. And thanks again.
Thank you, Carrie. Okay. I'm going to mute Carrie, and that's the only public comment that we had. Okay, Sean, do you want to continue with the...
All right. Then this concludes the general public comment portion of the meeting, and we will now move to our next agenda item, which is our public hearing. And I will now call to order this online public hearing on the topic of a nomination to the Clark County Heritage Register for the Du Bois Motor Building at 500 Washington Street. The steps involved in the hearing process are shown on the slide momentarily. Do any commission members have any ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest? I'll say that this was prepared by the Clark County Historic Museum, and I am a trustee on their board. However, I was not involved in the preparation of this nomination.
Hold on, my screen has frozen, so bear with me.
All right. So while Sharon gets that up, next step will be for staff to give a summary of the staff reports and recommendations. So that will be Mark. So Mark, as soon as Sharon gets the slides up, feel free to proceed.
Great. Thank you, Chair. Commissioners, Mark Person, Senior Planner with the City of Vancouver here. As Chair Dennison mentioned, this is a nomination to the local register for the Du Bois, I will say. Hopefully, Brad can correct us. Du Bois Motors Building, located at 500 Washington Street. We'll have a map here in a minute, but this is the building right at the corner of 5th and Washington, north of 5th and just west of Washington Street.
I'm so sorry. I'm trying to get back on.
No problem.
Hey, Mark, it's Du Bois. That's how they pronounced it.
Okay. All right, Andy. Thank you. It's fun. It's fun to say Du Bois, though, sometimes, isn't it? Okay. The Du Bois Motors Building.
Du Bois was the left wing for the Montreal Canadiens in the 50s.
Commissioners, you should have a staff report from me with a meeting date of October 7. I have the statement of significance. I pulled all of this information directly from the nomination. Brad Richardson, who put this together, can speak obviously in much greater detail. I will be speaking about the process here. We noticed for this public hearing, this building, let me go down to my process here. So the review criteria is that it has to be at least 50 years old or is of a lesser age and has exceptional importance. This building is greater than 50 years of age. Looks like it was built between 1927 and 1928. Has integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association. The nomination details that information as well. Is significantly associated with history, architecture, archaeology, engineering, or cultural heritage of the community. The nomination greatly details the Du Bois family in Clark County and Vancouver, and meets at least one of the criteria listed in VMC 1739070. And the nomination identifies three of those criteria is associated with events that have made a significant contribution to the broad patterns of national, state, or local history. The nomination details the Du Bois Motor Company and its place in car dealership in the mid-1900s. It exemplifies and reflects special elements of the county's history, and it is associated with the lives of persons significant in national, state, or local history. Again, it's closely tied to the Du Bois family, and I think the Dick Hanna, later the Dick Hanna Corporation. So, based on the information that was submitted, staff is recommending that, excuse me, the commission place the Du Bois Motors building on the local register. Again, this is staff recommendation to the commission, which has the decision-making authority on this. And I've included a vicinity map, our land use application, and the nomination form in the materials to the commission.
Mark, can I interrupt you? Jackie, I can't, my PowerPoint is frozen. I can't move my screen. Do you want to take over? Hello? Jackie?
Hey, Sharon. Yeah, go ahead and pass the ball to me.
Okay. I'll try to take it back. I don't know what's going on. It's just frozen.
Okay.
Let's see. Share. Where would it be? Participant? No.
You can just right click on me and change my role.
Okay.
So while they make that transition, do we have any questions for staff, bearing in mind the applicant will have an opportunity to speak and will have an opportunity to ask them questions as well? So are there, do any of the commissioners have any questions for staff? All right, and would the applicant like to say anything or have a presentation? Hopefully, if you do, we'll be able to get up. We'll need to unmute Brad. I don't know if that's going to have to wait for the handoff.
Let's see if I can.
Let's see.
Okay.
Me okay?
Yes. Go ahead, Brad.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So, yeah, I want to thank everyone on the commission for giving me the opportunity to present on this building. And, you know, we have been excited at the museum to have the opportunity to be a part of the process of putting buildings on the register. So I just want to thank you for that. This is an incredible building. Its history is quite important for the community. I'll just walk through first. The description of the building that we've used is one that we pulled from the Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation, in case you were wondering where we referenced that from. And based on that description, we didn't see anything necessarily that we felt compelled to check criteria two, in case you had any questions about that specific one in relation. And then again, we just did our traditional examination of the property's change over time based on different structures that have existed, owners, and then the current structure that's sitting there and a description based on what we could pull from the Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation. And for us, when examining this, looking first at the property, which is what we do, and we also look at that Department of Archaeology, the DAP, sorry, description, then we look at the figures that are associated with that property and start to understand what's the historical context. And for this one, we were very happy. I mean, we were aware for many years because we've actually conducted walking tours for a number of years in downtown Vancouver, and this has been one of the sites. When we did our examination for our tours, it was more of a cursory examination. So we had been aware of the Du Bois Motor Company that was there. But as we dug into examining the property itself, we found what we thought were several really significant factors related to this property that make it fairly unique. One is that it is a commercial structure that is related to the Du Bois family, which had large timber interests, had a large lumber mill, and they were, you know, the elite and powerful economic family in early 20th century into mid 20th century Vancouver. This is just an example of how they diversified their economic empire that they had locally. And this is a sterling example that is left of that economic significance that they had to help build Vancouver and the region. And then from there, examining the patterns of the auto dealership itself, we found two things in relation to that. One was that this area specifically, as we were looking and cross-referencing the directories, we found that there was a large number of auto dealerships that arose in the early 20th century at the same time that automobiles were starting to become present in Vancouver. And this also coincided with the rise of, or was somewhat in sync time-wise in with the rise of mass transit in Vancouver with a streetcar system. And the first automotive dealers that we were able to identify in this kind of Washington Street corridor were early dealers in which they traded in sporting goods, bicycles, and autos. So they were not singularly auto dealers at this time. And this makes sense in the ideal that Vancouver was still growing its mass transit franchises and trying to work out a streetcar system. So the automobile, and this also falls into national patterns in which the automobile was not necessarily the destined winner in the situation. And what happened is by the time this building was constructed, the streetcar system and franchises had begun to fail based on the fact that they were private systems and then not picked up by public. And you can look at relations into what happened in Europe related to the private versus public systems of mass transit in this form. And it basically left a nice opening for the automobile to become the primary vehicle in Clark County and across the nation. And this building here is representative of that time period and of that growth in this general district, which is can be considered the first district of automobile sales in Vancouver. And then eventually there was a district expansion onto Broadway and then up to further on Upper Main. But this is really where the heart of that started. And so we were very happy to find that this building in relation to what we thought we'd seen as a broader automobile, an early automobile district in Vancouver. So that's a part of its historical significance. And then in addition, the Du Bois family, obviously diversifying from their lumber interests and other ventures that they had, established this automobile dealership. And it was established in Vancouver and was the first of their automobile dealerships. From there, they eventually expanded into other used car and new car dealerships in Portland. And then this expanded to the entire Northwest. And as you saw in the nomination, the final sale of when the Du Bois family transitioned from it was one of the largest sales of an auto dealership at the time and had locations in Portland, Spokane, and Seattle. So it wasn't just a Vancouver or even Southwest Washington or even the metropolitan area significance. This is one that's really regional. So that was a very compelling piece of history that we uncovered as we started to really unpack how extensive their auto dealership was. And then in addition, if you look at the simple biographies of the families, the Du Bois family that was involved in this, each of them were involved. Some of the earliest members of the family that were involved in their business interests, plus this one, were involved in groups such as the Port of Vancouver and other civic groups. And really, they all led pretty significant lives in their own right. So, you know, we have anywhere from 5 to 6 individuals of really prominent significance in Vancouver and Clark County and then regionally too. And all of them had association or workings with the auto dealership and the building. And so, you know, for us, it's really this historical narrative tied to this family, tied to this business, and tied to this district is our primary argument for why we feel this building should be listed on the register and how it represents its importance. And to just give us a little kind of cherry on the top, we also have a connection with the Dick Hanna dealership, which is a large dealership in this metro area and is born from Vancouver. Eugene Hanna was Dick Hanna's father. He was an early local official. He was a prunarian, prominent figure, and then Dick Hanna came in and established his dealership and then grew that from this same area. And Dick Hanna got his start down in the same Washington corridor when he established his multiple dealerships that he had. He had more than one in this vicinity. And so with that, we feel very strongly that the significance of this building related to all of the factors that I mentioned warrant it to be recognized and for the community.
All right. Thank you, Brad. Do we have any questions from the commissioners for the applicants?
This is Michelle, Brad.
Yep.
I was wondering, when I look at the photo of the building, there's the brick structure around it, and then it looks like there's been infill with the wood. And I was wondering, is where that wood is, were those originally garage doors, or why is there that difference between the brick and the wood in the building?
So from our assessment of the photographs that we have available, which in the packet, if you look at the photograph that says Dubois Motor Company and that has a little phone number 59 on it, we believe those all to be bays that were part of the garage. And so that's where the difference comes from. And then eventually when the structure was, you know, because it's continuing to be used as a showroom today, it's actually a showroom for a moped or motor company of some sort. So they're dealing in autos again from the site, but it was transitioned to be a semi showroom style place. But yeah, from our assessment, those are the spots where the original bay doors were located.
Trost, was this built specifically for an automobile showroom originally? Or did it have a prior use?
No, this was built specifically from what we can tell. And we always try to be cautious in our assertions if we cannot find, you know, what we would say is kind of a specific, like someone literally stated this or that. But we do know the first occupant, the first tenant of this location is the Dubois Motor Company. We know they had a operation that was just nearby. There was actually the Johnson and Dubois Motor Company just in the near vicinity, about 1926. And then by 2728, they're in this building, same time the building was constructed. So unless someone had built it for just a minor, like just for a minute, it's almost 100% certain that this was built by obviously the Dubois family and for the purpose of their showroom and their car dealership. And I'm just trying to be cautious in, you know, the property records on this property are hard to read and interpret, and the family used different names for their businesses. But we have been able to tag them in directories and in property records to know for certain that they're around 2728 when they were in this building and the same time it was constructed.
Thank you.
My question. So are there any other questions? Well, I guess I did have another question. So Brad said that the architectural description was based on the what you had at DAP from the DAP description. That description is a little bit thin. And there's more to that, like what you just said about the bay doors, that's not actually in the architectural description. Is there more information that could go into that description that you currently have?
No, the on the section on the last line in which we talk about the building today, where we say the building has retained the original framing of the garage bay doors, is to the extent that we're familiar with that one section. And then essentially what DAP presented was the extent of which we were aware of the architectural elements of the building. So I don't currently at the moment have any additional details on the structure other than what we had surveyed from the description provided by DAP.
All right. And so now we'll open the public. If there aren't any more questions from the commissioners, go ahead and open the public comment period specifically for this item. Do any of our public in attendance in attendance want to make public comment on this topic?
So we only have Carrie in the public. Jackie, do you want to unmute her to see if she has a comment? If not, we don't need to read out the instructions.
Sure, and I see that we have a call-in user,
so okay.
Someone's dialed in. So let me just reiterate in case it looks like Carrie, your hand is still up from before, I think, on your device that we couldn't hear you from. So if you still have a question, leave your hand up. If not, if you could lower your hand, so you just click on the raised hand icon again. Otherwise, also our call-in user that came in through the phone, if you would like to raise your hand, you can dial *3, and that will raise your virtual hand. And when we acknowledge you, we'll unmute you and you can speak if you would like to make comment during this hearing. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and unmute Carrie to see if she's got something that she would like to comment on.
Oh, hi. No comment. Just
technology, okay.
Just technology issues.
No
it
worries.
Sounds great, though.
Okay. Again, our call-in users want to make sure that it's clear because we've had issues in the past that if you push *3 on your phone, that should raise your hand if you would still like to make a comment.
All right, we'll give them just a moment. And since, it looks like we don't have any public comments, so the
okay.
Public hearing is now closed and we will begin commission deliberation. So do any of the commissioners have anything to discuss regarding the nomination? While you all think, I did notice a few things as I was reading through the nomination, and a few of them are kind of technical details, and then there's one, I think, larger issue. In general, this is, it's very complete, very well done. And so there are a couple of smaller things that I think need to be clarified in the nomination. So the first is the nomination talks about contributing and non-contributing structures, but that is language that is used for district nominations, not nominations for individual buildings. So that's kind of confusing. A nomination really should just identify the extent of what is being nominated. In this case, it actually does that, but by using the contributing and non-contributing language, it does create a little bit of confusion. So I would like to see this revised to eliminate that contributing and non-contributing language. And it's just a matter of saying, this is the building that's being nominated. It shares a tax lot with other buildings that are not being nominated. And I think that will avoid that confusion. I think one of the other things is there's an extensive bibliography, and that's really great. But throughout the text of the nomination, it talks about records show and available records, but there's not a connection between the statements of fact in the nomination and the sources that they're drawn from. And while I'm sure that all the statements of fact are substantiated by the sources, having that connection, I think, is really important. I personally don't care what method is used for that, whether it's parentheticals or endnotes or footnotes. I don't think that really matters. I think what does matter is making the connection between where the statements of fact come from, making a connection between the statements of fact and where they come from. And those are the only two, real technical things that I would like to see revised before this gets adopted. And I don't think that's something that would prevent us from voting on it, since they are, really when it comes down to it, fairly minor things. The other thing, though, is Brad gave, told us why they didn't check #2. But looking at this building, it could check #2. And, I went back and looked at our ordinance, And there's nothing saying that the nomination has to include all grounds for of significance. So, you know, it doesn't have to include everything. But, you know, when I look at this building, we've got a great example of early 20th century, you know, downtown commercial buildings, that steel beam that made those big openings possible. But at the same time, it's a little bit unusual because it's only one story instead of two stories. So I think that there's, and I think that that might be connected to the fact that it was used as a dealership. So they maybe wanted a larger opening. So I think that there would be grounds for checking number two, and which is that it embodies the distinctive architectural characteristics of a type, period, not style in this case, but also method of construction. Since this is one of our opportunities to kind of intervene in the life of a building to really make this as complete as possible, I really would like to see whether two is a possibility. There's no obligation from the applicant to do that, but I would really encourage the applicant to maybe amend it in the future. You know, I recognize that there was limited information to go on. If it's possible to fill that out, you know, with some of the architectural history elements of it. So I don't think that that's something that would prevent us voting on this tonight. I think the other things that I mentioned, those technical issues, are just some edits that would need to be done, I think, before this nomination is signed. Is there any other discussion from any of the other commissioners? Any reaction to my long-winded comment?
I wanted to say about the Du Bois Auto Building is that it remained an active car dealership until the late 1980s, when Dick Hanna dealerships moved out to the Van Wall area, and that that building served as the Hanna Honda dealership until 1988. And so it had a 60-year history of being a focal point of automotive commerce in Clark County. And Brad did explain how it was a far-flung automotive empire, but it's important for Vancouver because in its time, in the period until the mall became a more central point for commercial enterprises in our area, almost all of the car dealerships were in that core area, including Bill Marshall Ford, which is where Jorge's tequila factory is located, for where Foley Chevrolet was, where Rex Buick Olds was, and that's where Riverview Savings stands today. And so it's one of the last remaining exponents of automotive history sales in downtown area, and also the prominence of the Du Bois family, for whom Du Bois Drive on McLaughlin Heights is named, the palatial homes that were in that area. So they were a prominent family who are almost forgotten today. And so I would like to encourage colleagues to approve this nomination. Thank you.
This is Don Trost. I support the nomination. I support the recommendations that you made, Sean, to enhance the application. And if you want a motion, I so move that we approve the application with the recommendations that you've added.
And I would second that. I support the nomination as well. That's Michelle.
You're muted, Sean.
Don made the motion and Michelle seconded, and just for clarity, the motion is that we approve the nomination with the condition that the So that the language around contributing and non-contributing buildings is clarified, and that the, I'm spacing the word right now, but the sources for all of the statements of fact are identified through either footnotes or parentheticals in an appropriate way. Does that capture it, Don?
Yes, and also I agree that they ought to investigate whether it does fit criteria 2 as well. I wouldn't make that a condition for approval at all.
Okay. So our motion is to approve with those two technical conditions. So I don't know if it's Sharon or Jackie who will be taking the roll call. Oh, wait, discussion of the vote of the motion first. Do we have any discussion? All right, hearing none, Jackie or Sharon, can you take the roll call vote?
Here, I'll take the roll call. We switch roles here. Julie?
Can you hear me?
Now we can.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, Sean?
Aye.
Greg? Foos?
Yes.
Belly?
Yes. Aye.
Andy Greg?
Aye.
Michelle? Michelle, you're muted.
Aye.
And Don? Coast?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, staff, and our applicants who joined, and congratulations. So we will now move on to our next agenda item. We've moved demolition, so we will address old business, and that includes the review of the CAMAS interpretive panels. Yes. So we will continue with Mr. Richardson.
I'm sorry, right. Do you want me to reclaim the host, or do you want to keep it?
I'll just keep it.
Okay.
Just keep it. I've moved both Terry and Brad into the panel so they can unmute and mute themselves.
Okay.
There we go. All right. So I just want to thank the commission again. I want to second also what Terry has said about thank you for the opportunity to put together these panels and be able to provide interpretation into downtown CAMAS. I personally want to give an extra thanks. I grew up, I'm born and raised out in CAMAS, Washougal, so it was an honor for me to be able to work on this and also have the museum participate in this process. And just for a little background of the process is we have worked with stakeholders, which has both been the city, the DCA, and other interested parties throughout the process of putting this together. So that the community has a voice, because our intent whenever we're doing interpretation as an organization is to facilitate discussion and try to communicate the story on the behalf of the community with the skills that we have related to interpretation and exhibition. And we feel that we've done a very good job in doing that outreach and having those connections out in the community with the necessary parties. And then in turn, as a part of this process, we obviously understood the focus of the commission on preservation, and often we're thinking about buildings and structures. And so in our focus, we wanted to make sure to really think through the built environment. And we did that in two ways, in which we looked at the layout and the setup of these panels. And I've mentioned this before in the earlier discussion. We've looked at the panels and downtown CAMAS as a gallery in its own right. And so we've produce the panels and place them in an order in which can guide people through the gallery of downtown in a way that is set up aesthetically very well. And recently, thanks to the commission, the CAMAS collage, the paper mill collage was able to put up, and there's interpretation on there that talks about the history of the mill. So as you read and seen in our first panel, we decided to not revisit that same history and be duplicative. We decided to complement it with discussing how the mill had influenced both the infrastructure, the economy, and the government of CAMAS, and discuss how there has been a relationship, or there was a relationship up until very recent years between both the mill and the city, and that how Camas as a sense and place of infrastructure as a downtown is unique to Clark County with its angled streets in the way that they are positioned, because the mill acts as a center of gravity, kind of pulling all commerce and culture towards it. And then at the same time, with their innovative push in the 1960s for the Operation Foresight and pulling from other model mall or kind of parkway downtowns, they've created a unique and one of a kind space based on the actual roads and infrastructure of downtown. So the first panel, as you've seen and read, really covered that. And then we tried to complement it with some images that apply to that and help to forward the story, but that aren't necessarily imperative to the main text that we provided. And then the call out is one that will be essentially a text box that is expanded, and it gives a little more prominence and allows both us not to have to integrate the naming of the city into this concept of talking about the physical downtown, but gives it enough prominence and respect that it that it deserves as the name of the city and also its connection to the Native nations of Southwest Washington. So we feel the call out is fully sufficient in doing that. And we use those all the time in our exhibits to highlight topics that may not necessarily fit into the flow of our interpretive scheme that we have. For panel two, we did focus on buildings specifically. We set the stage where the fire of 1923 obviously shifted the landscape to some degree. It didn't completely devastate downtown, but it did alter the views, and it led to the rise of the buildings that we chose to speak about, three of those. And then the other one that we mentioned, the Camas Hotel, is a remnant of that earlier period. And so we felt, you know, excited with that. And we this week actually just received the photos from a professional photographer that we have sent down to Camas of those buildings. So each of the buildings, the Stoller Building, Farrell Building, Liberty, and Camas Hotel, have professionally taken photographs that will be paired up with each of those buildings so that people won't have to guess, you know, and also so we don't have to expend text space to explain where people should look. They'll be able to look and see the building and then identify it at sight. We felt that was the best method to go. And then obviously giving a very significant nod to the builder John Rothler, who is significant not just in Camas but across Clark County for the styles that he brought. One image that I do want to just kind of explain as the downtown Camas image, it says these photos. The reason it says that is because our professional photographer actually has taken a contemporary photo of the Liberty Theater and the Farrell Building, and she has blended those together. So we have that now. We didn't have it at the time in which we submitted, but it will show the historic 1930s image and then the 2020 image blended together with the lines lining up in kind of those photos that I'm sure many of you have seen when people hold photographs up to show yesterday and today. And we felt that was important to just show people change over time and also no change over time, because those buildings are fairly they're fairly close to what they were in that time. And then panel three, we felt it was really important to really connect with the people of Camas. What sources we pulled from were the authoritative sources that are available right now. So we didn't just kind of randomly select any individuals. These are individuals that have been highlighted specifically in texts before. And we also, they were very cognizant to select people from different disciplines, different trades, different walks of life, to be able to highlight the breadth of people that have lived, worked, and worshiped in downtown and across the city of Camas over the years. And today I just received images for all but three of our subjects. So each one of these bios will also have an image of those subjects paired up with them. We're still working on like one or two more. It's not always easy to get photos of people, unfortunately, but we've just got the whole lion's share from one of the authors that worked on a book called Legendary Locals, of which we have borrowed this title, and we spoke with that author, and she's very pleased with our work and how we have represented the figures. And so with that, any questions?
It's Michelle here. Yeah. I read all the narrative about what the panels are going to have on them and everything, but do you have like any artist renderings of what they're going to look like or how big they're going to be? Maybe I missed something, but I didn't have an understanding of that when I was looking through the materials.
So as of today, since we get the content approval by the commission, then we're going to move into the design phase with the county designer. And that will be the next piece that will happen from here. And the big piece was to make sure that we weren't going to provide the designer content that they couldn't use or anything of that sort if there was some kind of major red flag. And this is essentially, we want this to be in stone. You know, there's things that we will negotiate with the designer, but we wanted to make sure before we put anything into design, which is an incredibly expensive process both for us and the county, that we didn't make any unnecessary assumptions without getting approval and feedback from the commission.
Aaron and Jackie, just to clarify, our role right now is just review and feedback.
Yes.
Correct.
And I wanted to give a little, because I know, I'm not sure if our two newer members know the background of this. So this is being funded by funding that comes out of a document excise fee that goes into an account for historical promotion activities in the county. And some of it goes towards grants that the commission provides out to historic organizations. And then if the commission themselves has a project, they request to the council, county council, funding for a specific project. So this is one of the ones that the commission had decided they wanted to do for this year, for 2020, through that funding. So we're moving forward with that. And so this is for you all to, the commission back years ago wanted to make sure that they were able to participate in kind of what the content of the panels were going to be. So this is your opportunity to kind of see what the team has put together for content. And then they'll be moving next, as Brad said, into putting it design for the actual panel itself and what it will look like. But this is what it would say and the information be portrayed.
So I had a couple of questions. I kind of assume what the answer to this one is going to be, but I'm going to ask anyway. Are there any I think you've got a really great cross-section of post-European individuals, but are there any pre-European individuals that we even have documentation of that might be able to be included in this?
That is something we absolutely did examine, and we did look deep into the Native Nations period of the Kamis-Washougal area. With the focus on trying to remain within the downtown corridor, it was, and historically these things are difficult to parse, and I have reached out to contacts in the local community that are very well versed with the Native Nations, even asking, you know, what was the presence of communities specifically in this downtown corridor and even adjacent. And the answers were somewhat ambiguous and not certain at the moment, just because there are so many different nations to consider over different times. And so for that specific place, we did not find one, a nation that we felt comfortable making an assertion that they were present in a way. And then two, individuals did not arise in that examination. And we definitely had an eye for trying to find any folks from both pre-European periods and from various backgrounds. And this was the main set of people that we were able to identify based on records available and current historical patterns in relation to the city's growth. So we apologize. We did definitely look into that, and we regret that we were not able to provide that at this moment.
I figured that'd be the answer, but the spirit of Robert Hines would have haunted me for the next month if I didn't ask. Do you have any other questions?
Hey, Brad, I have one more question for you.
Yeah.
So maybe this is specific just to the downtown area, but Kamis had Prune Hill, right? And that was a really, am I thinking right? Prune Hill, wasn't that associated with Kamis?
Yes, Prune Hill is associated with Kamis in relation to the actual incorporated city. I am not certain Prune Hill actually fell within that. It would be kind of considered more of the foothills and environs of the area, but Prune Hill is related to the area in these days, definitely. And I'm just trying to think exactly its relationship. It's kind of the same as Brush Prairie, not Brush Prairie, sorry, Fern Prairie, and a couple other areas that are very near the Camas area. Was there anything specific to Prune Hill that you were you had in mind?
Well, it just seemed like Prune Hill at one time, if I'm remembering correctly, it was quite an industry, and the area was well known for the prunes. And it, I was just wondering if any consideration was given to maybe including something like that, or if it would be appropriate to include something like that.
Within the scope of working with the stakeholders, we all felt really that it was important because of the nature of the unique downtown to really focus on just that that space there. And we did trend a little outside when we mentioned like the industrial park and other things that are developed a little further out, but that's in relation to the city government and specific initiatives by Nan Henriksen, who's a monumental figure to Camas. So we really did try to keep very tight to that downtown. So Prune Hill actually did not, I'll be honest, it did not come up in consideration just because we were very focused on both the infrastructure of downtown, the buildings that were down there, and then the people that were associated. And if you actually survey, if we survey, I'm thinking about it right now, if we surveyed individuals, there's not anyone that I would pull in relation to Prune Hill that I can think of off the top of my head that would be significant enough to actually place on a panel like that. That is a Camasonian, probably actually a Vancouverite would be more appropriate in Arthur Lynn, who is, I believe, credited with starting the prune industry up on Prune Hill. If I'm correct, I hope I'm correct in that. Andy can probably correct me.
Okay. Thank you, Brad.
Yeah.
Do we have any other questions or comments? I think the only other thing that we've got, I'm not sure if it's a placeholder image or if it's the final image of the Camas flower. If there are any diagrams or anything that could be used to illustrate what is discussed in the narrative, I think that would be great to see and also help with the representation a little bit. That's just one thing that I noticed. So unless we have any other comments, then we will go ahead and move on to our next agenda item, which is, it's time for part three of the trifecta. So we have Brad Richardson with a request for the Clark County Historic Museum Lecture Series sponsorship. And since I am a trustee of the museum, I'll be sitting out this conversation.
All right.
What to say? Go ahead, Brad.
So once again, I want to thank the commission. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak three times this evening. And I also want to thank you for your sponsorship for this past year. As everybody knows, it's been a rough year for everybody. And your sponsorship that you provided for this speakers series year has allowed us to really help, I think, for us as an institution, bring a very positive point forward in that we were able to bring our talks virtually to people for free on Facebook. So we did our first two speaker series events of the year were in-person events in February and in March. And then once the state guidelines came down to close the building, we were essentially closed for 6 months. And I'm not sure if everyone's aware, but yeah, we were closed for 6 months from March until just last Thursday. And so we were unable to have in-person events at that time. And so to be able to, one, honor our obligation to the community to provide these historical discussions and this engagement, and to also honor what the commission had provided. And at the same time, our hope was to bring history to people at a time when things are rough and to bring engaging discussions online. And so every talk that we had intended to do or we may have to have pivoted on the topic, but a talk happened every single month that we had planned to have a speaker series. And we saw pretty incredible numbers. We saw anywhere from 35 to 50 consistent viewers the entire time during our talks, which it sounds like a low number, but keeping a 50 people consistently on a Facebook feed for 45 minutes is a pretty Herculean effort. We looked at it, and it was one of our most popular feeds that we had for the entire year. They've been shared, they've been talked about. Organizations that may have not necessarily come into the museum to see a talk have been sharing them and discussing them. And we're also in conversation with the Battleground School District and other school districts right now to repurpose these for local education, since teachers are now having to deal with a digital format. And since these talks are essentially a very nice lecture series, and we may even provide companions in which I can do a live question and answer with the students in combination. So this material and this content that you've provided through your sponsorship has essentially is going to be doubled to the community, and it is still up and available for everyone to see. So thank you for that. It really has kept us going through the year to be able to do these talks. In addition, we've been able to work with Wager Audio on these and get some professional help. And so we've worked with a community partner on these too, which has been incredible. And they donated their time also to help us out with these as we worked through how to have a virtual talk for the community. And so this year, obviously 2021 is coming, and we always do our planning in July and August for our programs. And then we decide that we need to have the appropriate investment to be able to conduct these. And next year is going to be something that will be definitely interesting. We are building in the idea of both having a virtual and digital feed, but then an in-person element too, as safety requirements allow. We do know, we just seen the other day, that theaters are being allowed to reopen at 25% capacity, which means that in-person events and talks with safety precautions and very strict requirements could be something that potentially happens early to the middle of next year. Regardless, we're prepared to do our speaker series either way, and we want to bring this to the community. And in our talk, the first one in February, we actually have had an opportunity, and this is one of the things that's great through your sponsorship. We're able to have our staff work with community members, reach out to people at historic buildings. I actually forgot one thing that I want to mention too, is part of what we were able to do this year's speaker series is we actually raised funds for the Kiggins Theater and the Liberty Theater in addition. So we had donation opportunities for those historic theaters that we used during that. And that's something we can continue to do. So if there's buildings or there's organizations within historic buildings, we can actually use this tool online as a fundraising opportunity to help further preservation of those buildings by keeping the business owners in those that we know are good stewards. So that's one thing aside that I forgot to mention about this year. But for our talks for 2021, we intend to highlight structures and buildings. And so for February, we received feedback from the community on our recent talk on housing and race in Clark County, and that there was indication that people wanted to have an expansion or a further discussion on certain elements of that. And so as a response, we reached out to Melissa Williams, who is an expert on these things, and she has agreed to be our February speaker to talk about that. And she's a prominent member of the community who's dove deep into African-American community related to housing and other things that have come up. And we are planning to reach out to the AME Zion Church up in Harney Heights to ask if that could be our physical site, because it is a past VHA building that is now converted to a church. So we feel like that's an appropriate site to both talk about the historic preservation of structures that are mid-century modern that are coming up into that realm of being within the nomination within the register, but then also places that are of cultural significance to minority communities and diverse communities that maybe have not been highlighted or had a voice in the discourse in Clark County. So that first one in February, we have started to work on that one. And then from there, you can see the rest of it. We plan on wanting to be at the Red Cross Building, the Slocum House, Kiggins Theater, potentially Esther Short Park, Capitol Plank House, And really what's happened is because we can't have events in our physical building, we've planned on trying to have either the broadcasts or small versions of in-person of talks at buildings of historical significance, buildings that relate to the topic and buildings that need to be, the community needs to be made aware of in relation to preservation. And our intention is to still provide these for free digitally online as long as we can. And at the same time, see about how we can start to get an audience in person. And so, as you know, everything is fluid, but we want to be proactive in that. And so your sponsorship over all these years has allowed us to be able to take the time to work with these individual partners, to reach out to these places of historic importance, and to be able to have the logistics to set up and go out and be at these spaces. And so I know that budgets are uncertain in 2021, and nobody knows exactly what things will look like, but we'd like to request the same level of sponsorship for this year at $2,000, so that we can continue to provide this service for the community, also help make people aware. Every talk that we do, we mention and we promote that the Historic Preservation Commission is our sponsor. So this is an immense amount of outreach for the commission, and we work to be the best stewards possible in putting a good foot forward for the commission and for ourselves in showing the breadth of history and the important places that need to be preserved and highlighted in our community.
Do we have any questions for Brad? All right, hearing none, and Jackie and Sharon, this would go into our budget discussion. This is not something that we would take action on right now, correct?
Correct, because we don't have an approved budget yet.
All right, just for clarity on what we're doing today. Thank you, Brad, and with that, I believe you can go home or you can stay. It's up to you.
Thank you all. I'm gonna take off, but thank you all for letting me speak tonight.
All right. So we will go ahead and move on to our next agenda item, which is something continuing on discussions that we've had before about the City of Vancouver Heritage Overlay Code language. This is something that the commission has expressed a desire to see revision of that language in the past, and at not the last City Council meeting, but I believe 2 City Council meetings ago, maybe 3, they are weekly. Sarah Fox, who is our former chair, brought forward an initiative to go ahead and update that language, and the City Council decided not to do so. So that is a good opportunity for us to discuss if there are any steps that we would like to take, next steps for if there's anything we want to do about advocating for what we've already advocated for in the past. We could consider doing, writing a letter, showing up during citizen forum to offer public comment, and there may be other things that we could consider as well. So I'll open the floor for discussion.
So, Fran, do you happen to know, this is Michelle, do you happen to know what the City Council's reasoning was for why they turned down her proposal, or do you have much information on that?
I was not in attendance, but as I understand it, there were 2 basic things brought up. One was that this is maybe something that should be done through a larger initiative for all the commissions at once and not just historic preservation. And the other is there was a comment that it was not a pressing need.
This is Julie. I don't know if this happened. Well, let me back up. Can you give us the context of what was proposed, what changes were proposed? Because I don't recall that. I don't know if I was on the.
So Councillor Fox had a proposal for the Heritage Overlay District itself that would have transferred the main thrust of it is that it would have made the commission the decision-making body for the Heritage Overlay Districts instead of city staff.
Succinct. Yeah, I think the two suggestions that you had are actually good ones. And I actually would even say both, not one or the other. Because it sounds like if there's an argument being made that all commissions, you know, who would coordinate that kind of larger effort? Is there even a need in other commissions to have revisions? You know, there's a lot of different contextual questions. So to me, that doesn't quite make sense. So it would be interesting to have like an actual face-to-face or a dialogue. So like you were saying, going to one of the meetings and also writing a letter, I think makes sense.
You know, we could form a subcommittee to watch the recording of the city council meeting to make sure that, you know, we are speaking from a well-informed position and could propose something, a course of action for the commission to vote on. That is certainly, that's a way that we could do it if we feel like this is too complex to tackle right now. Or we could, if we feel like there is a strong path forward right now with the information that we have, we could also vote to take some action, or we could decide not to do anything.
This is Don. For clarity, the proposal that Sarah had was never placed before the commission. Is that correct? I mean, before the city council.
Right. They declined to begin the initiative that would have led to the revision. So yeah,
they weren't voting on the wisdom of the revision. They were just deciding they didn't want to even take it up.
Right.
It's Andy. I was wondering if maybe it'd be a good idea if we were to consult with former HPC Chair Sarah Fox and hear some informed sensibility from her about where she thinks we might tackle this.
That gets into, I am not sure of the appropriate way for us to have those interactions. If I don't know if there are any kinds of restrictions on that or if there are appropriate ways to do it. I think that we'd want to make sure that we were following that before doing so. I'm not quite sure. County staff probably can't help with this, but Mark or Jason, I don't know if you can help with that, if, you know, how the commission could have conversations with a council member.
So, Sean, I think your point's well taken, but maybe the commission could consider a subcommittee that would be involved with some goal setting. And if revision of this language or if revision of this policy would be a goal that we want to pursue, it might be in a greater context of what the commission's long-term plans are, or medium-term and short-term plans, because it seems like we react to things as they come down the pike like this. This is the first I've heard of it. And so maybe we would like to put it in the context of what the goals of this advisory board will be in the near term.
I think that's a good point. Are there any other thoughts on this issue?
That sounds like a reasonable approach, what Andy's recommended.
All right. Well, then I think forming a subcommittee, and that can be two or three people to tackle this issue, has been suggested, although we would need a formal motion to form a subcommittee, so we can go ahead if someone wants to make that motion if there aren't any other comments. So, Andy, do you want to make your suggestion a formal motion?
I'll do my best. I move that we form a subcommittee to identify short, medium, and long-term goals for the Historic Preservation Commission. And if approved, I'd be glad to serve.
For the Vancouver City Code language, just for clarity.
Okay, and I'll make sure we don't cross any lines of propriety.
All right. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
All right. So we have a motion by. I'm sorry. What was that?
Who seconded that?
That was Julie who seconded. So we have a motion by Andy with a second by Julie to form a subcommittee to set the commission goals for the revision of the Vancouver City code language regarding heritage overlay districts. So do we have any discussion of the motion? I think the only thing that I would say is that probably a good thing, since the city council meeting was recorded, that'd be a good place to start. Is for this subcommittee. And then our commission has as well written a letter that has touched on this topic but not gone into depth. So it would probably be good to have that as part of the consideration as well, since our subcommittee members may not necessarily be familiar with that. So unless there is any other discussion, Sharon, can you go ahead and take the roll call vote for the motion?
Yes. Julie?
Aye.
Sean?
If that's Sean, then aye.
Sean, yes. Greg Foos?
Yes.
Belly?
Aye.
Andy?
Aye.
Michelle?
Aye.
Don Trost? Don, you're muted. Did Don say something?
Don said aye.
Okay, didn't hear that. Okay.
All right, the motion passes unanimously. So we have one volunteer for our subcommittee. It can take up to two more. Do we have any other volunteers?
I can volunteer.
Greg? Well, I can fill us out to three. I don't want to take it away from anyone else, but I can do that. So unless there's someone else, I can take the third spot. All right. So we will convene that subcommittee between now and our next meeting so that we can have something to discuss. So let's move on to what I believe is our last agenda item,
Sean,
tonight, which is
Sean, sorry, I have one.
Yes.
New business item. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
I sent the commission an email about the Cultural Resource Summit. It's a virtual summit from October 20 to 21. We submitted an application for free registration and we were awarded that. And because we have no training budget, this is a nice opportunity to have a free conference registration. Would anyone like to attend? It's virtual.
I would. This is Feli.
Oh, Feli, would you like to attend?
I would like to attend, yes.
Okay, I will email you tomorrow because you have to register tomorrow. I'll contact you by email.
Okay, perfect. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Feli. Anything else, Sharon or Jackie, or Mark or Jason, on new business?
Nothing from me.
And nothing from the city side either. Thank you.
All right. then we will tackle the last item that we bumped to the end now that it is the end. So the demolition subcommittee reconstituted with a fresh member, revisited the discussion that we have had up until this point, and came up with a revised recommendation. Just as a reminder, the demolition subcommittee was looking at the ways that, starting with the county, that we could improve the demolition process to address the issue of the loss of both historic resources, but also information about potentially historic resources. And that's what these recommendations are for. They're for starting with the county, but there is also, since the city has language around this as well, that we would eventually move on to that as well. So hopefully everyone has had a chance to review the recommendation before we go ahead and take a look at that. Would either of our other two subcommittee members, either Don or Greg, like to say anything about how we got to this set of recommendations?
Well, Sean, I would just like to thank you for formulating all of our thoughts so clearly and succinctly in the flowchart. I think it really reflects very clearly the discussion that we had. So thank you for doing that for all of us.
So I agree with Greg. The only thing I would add is that what we have tried to do is really make it harder to proceed with demolition without some reasonable opportunity for determining and investigating whether or not the building or structures under consideration for demolition should be documented or preserved. And right now we think that that process is inadequate. That was expressed in our original subcommittee. But I think we've come to a clearer resolution of how to proceed now with the second iteration. So that's, I think I'm very pleased with where we've come down on this, and I hope the commission will agree.
And, you know, I think as we're discussing this, we should keep in mind that while some of this may be able to just be some changes to process that don't require any legislative change, that there are things in this that would require changes to the county code. So pursuing this process or any parts of this process would mean advocating for revisions to the county code around demolitions and historic preservation. So if we look at the recommendation document, you know, at the top, we have what the current kind of flow chart of the current process is. And hopefully that is pretty self-explanatory. And what the subcommittee has done is created a recommendation for kind of increasing opportunities for preservation as the significance of something is more greatly established. I think it's probably a good way to put this, which is why you see this, you know, at first, is it on a register, yes or no, and a certain thing happens? If it's not on a register, does it kind of cross over that magic 50-year threshold? You know, yes or no, something else happens. And then you get to the end, which is recommendation number 3, which is when a demolition happens, what we would like to see happen to provide some documentation. And this is probably one of the bigger differences from the last time the commission saw this. For those who have been on long enough to be through this long process, is creating some teeth for illegal demolitions. The subcommittee recognized that as the process gets, as more protections for historic buildings get into place, it kind of increases the incentive for owners to get around the process in one way or another, such as an illegal demolition. So creating a disincentive to demolish any buildings that might fall under any of these categories illegally through a 5-year construction moratorium, which is something that we've seen in other jurisdictions. One of the big things that we would like to discuss is really what happens for a building that's not designated but is 50 years old. And the subcommittee came up with two versions of what might happen there. And the second one has more teeth. And this came in part from Greg's discussion of the process that's in place in Sacramento, California. So do we have any overall questions about what's here or discussion of overall, and then we can get to discussion or questions of this kind of specific question of recommendation number two.
Clarifying point, just to make sure I'm understanding. Current process doesn't go away. We keep the current process and then we add on this new process on top of that, correct?
Correct.
Just making sure.
It's Andy. This topic's been under discussion for several years. I want to thank the members of the subcommittee for their assiduous attention to it. And I'd like to encourage colleagues to approve the revised process.
I'm not sure, Julie, that Sean understood your question. The new process would replace the current process, I thought. Sean, am I wrong on that?
Replace it for those. So there are a couple of things that already happen if something is either on the Clark County Heritage Register or is a designated building within a Vancouver Heritage Overlay District. So that's a process where we already have an involvement in those. In the case of, except for building official demolition orders, we are the decision-making body in those two cases. So everything that we're talking about in these other cases, except for maybe the 45-day demolition delay, is already in place. There's the opportunity for mitigation, for approval or denial of demolition. So this would be something that would apply to those buildings that don't fall into those two categories.
So just a question.
Is a wording incorrect in the new process? We state on there also Clark County Heritage Register property.
It says Clark County Cultural Resource Inventory, but it doesn't say
My mistake. Okay.
Okay.
So this is Michelle. I have a question. So when it gets down to the point where it says, is the building 50 years old? So are we going to choose between recommendation number 2A and number 2B? Do we need to choose between those two?
Discuss, yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, the commission can, this is just the recommendation from the subcommittee that with this in mind, the commission can decide to take any direction that it wants to go. This is just a recommendation from the subcommittee. But this was kind of the key thing that the subcommittee wasn't sure about is for a building that's 50 years old, how stringent should that process be, which is what led to the 2A and the 2B. So why don't we talk about that specifically?
So I will acknowledge, this is Dawn again, I will acknowledge that I was a strong advocate for 2B. Because I wanted this to be forced into consideration before demolition. Under 2A, we can have findings, but they can go ahead and listen, nod their head, and demolish anyway. And while I understand from our prior discussions that that may be as far as we can go under current code, that we ought to, my view was that we ought to take a stronger stance on trying to at least get acceptable documentation of buildings before they get demolished, not by asking them, but by making it a requirement. And yes, it means more teeth, but I think it's time to ask for more teeth. So that's why I personally am in favor of 2B.
So Dawn, it's Michelle again. So I just want to follow up here. So basically, if we go with 2B, basically the demolition might go ahead, but we can issue findings or mitigation, and they have to follow through on that mitigation before the demolition is allowed. That's kind of what that is, right?
Sean, correct me, but I believe that was the intent.
Yeah. 2B would basically collapse those first two pieces of the flow chart so that, you know, you can almost just add or over 50 years old to that list at the very top. Now, is the building on the Clark County Cultural Resource Inventory, or more than 50 years old?
Okay.
It basically gives the commission opportunity to in a demolition structure that may not be recognized on one of our lists or inventories or registers, but may still warrant additional protection and consideration. And part of that comes from, I think, the reality that limited resources, there's limited staff, and there are many, many sites and structures throughout the county that could potentially qualify the criteria for living on one of the various registers. But, the county just got to that point of identifying all those structures. So it's kind of a safety net provision that would hopefully minimize situations where a potentially significant structure over 50 years of age could kind of fall through the cracks and be inadvertently lost without the opportunity for any mitigation.
About the time, I think we discussed before about potentially making it a 45-year-old because it takes some time to go through some of the process, and by the time it reaches demolition, it is now at that threshold. Did you all discuss that or have any thoughts on changing it from 50 to like 49? Something where we can ensure that we're not just reactive, we're proactive.
From our earlier subcommittee discussions, we decided we did talk about whether it should be 30 or 35, 40, what that should be, and recognizing that 50 is kind of included as, like I said, a magic number in our designation criteria, that it would provide clarity for anything that actually went into effect, that there's consistency from one place to another. I'm sorry, I wasn't specific there. 50 is one of the criteria for listing on the Heritage Register. Are there any other comments or discussion?
Sean, I was just going to make a process comment. So community planning department is the only department in the county which the council has to approve the work plan, and we're going to council on November 4th to request approval. And so if the commission votes to approve this, we would include this on that department work plan, and the council has to approve allowing staff to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you're aware of the process.
That was great, because that was going to be the next part of the discussion, is if we do vote for these recommendations, what that means from a procedural standpoint. But before we move to that discussion, Julie, did you have a comment about the content?
Just to summarize what you all were saying earlier, which is at the very top of this new process, we would add in at the end of Washington State, is our farm register, and is the building over 15 years old? And then, in a sense, eliminate that second section where it says, like, are you collapsing that? I guess I just kind of want to be clear about what is being proposed if we did go with 2B.
Yeah, if we went with 2B, that would effectively collapse recommendation number one and recommendation number two into a single recommendation where or 50 years old gets added after historic barn register. So it's not an and, but an or.
Well, I sort of disagree with that. If it is possible under 2B that it's over 50 years old, but we determine that it doesn't need to be documented or reviewed or delayed. We could come to that conclusion, Sean, whereas we would not come to that conclusion if it was on one of the existing registers.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so that would be something for us to discuss, whether it would just follow the exact process of number one, or whether the commission could just waive it all for a building over 50 to simplify it, simplify the process for the applicant.
Yeah, I think you've done the opportunity to seize opportunity to streamline as well, where the commission, you know, can clearly find that the structure wouldn't meet any of those other criteria for listing or protection, and that a simpler process that just requires standardized documentation can be implemented in a pretty straightforward manner.
So would the flow for that look like as we are now for number two? If the answer is yes, and you go to recommendation number two, the commission is then deciding whether there's a demolition delay past that commission meeting? Is that what you're getting at? Donna, Greg?
Well, I think his concern was that collapsing it, as we discussed earlier, would trigger a more involved process through recommendation number one automatically, were that necessary for all structures over 50 years old.
That's exactly what my thinking was, that potentially you would have a building where you said, okay, look, you can just go right to three, do your minimum photographing as your documentation and move on. Whereas if we thought there really needed to be more time and thought to, you know, maybe more extensive documentation or consideration of reuse or anything else, we have the extra 45 days to discuss it. So this gives us some
discussion.
Right. It gives us the discretion to decide whether
it's kind of a common.
Because even under number one, the commission could decide to do no mitigation measures. Could just say, go on to number three. You know, this is a Garrett Colonial with vinyl siding. Just go on. You know, that would be an option under number one as it is. So I think it sounds like the question is about the delay part of that, whether we would want the commission to be able to waive the remainder of the delay for some of these buildings?
Well, yes, but also realistically, if it's on one of the registers mentioned up there, it's not likely that we wouldn't at least spend some time thinking about additional documentation, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, to me, two, potentially you're saying, well, it's not on a register, and maybe it's not worthy of being on a register anyway, so let's just let them do minimum documentation under, you know, the flow chart down to three and press on. Whereas, yes, conceivably under recommendation one, you could move quickly, but again, we're starting by talking about buildings that are already acknowledged as having some significance. So it's not likely that I would think that would happen. So that to me is the difference. But under 2B, you do have a yes and no there. Yeah, it needs more time for consideration, or no, it doesn't. And if it doesn't, you just move straight on to recommendation 3, and that's at our discretion.
I have another question, sorry to segue off of that a little bit. The question here is, and it's not related to what we were just talking about, but under 2, let's see. Under 2, I think it's either 2B, the Heritage Preservation Commission determines whether the building is eligible for listing on the County Historic Register. My question would be, would we also want to include some of these other options, not just the register, the Clark County Register, but also the inventory, the historic property inventory, some of these other things that we've listed above? Because if it's reached 2, it would have been no up at the top.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm just asking if that's something we would want to, if it matters at this stage, if it's just we make a recommendation one way or the other, or if it's eligible for listing on any of these registers or inventories. But I'm not sure how bound we would be to this to only do the one. But I did want to mention maybe it's worthwhile to also just see if it's eligible for some of these other things.
So the Clark County Heritage Register has a lower threshold for eligibility than either the statewide or the National Register. So we could probably keep it simple by just talking about that one. I have not looked at the criteria for the State Historic Barn Register, to be honest, so I don't know if the criteria for that is substantially different than what we have for the Clark County Heritage Register. So I think that that's probably the only one that we would need to worry about there being a difference.
Okay.
To eligible for listing on one of the recognized historic property registers or something like that, words like that instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would that be better, Jerry?
I mean, that sounds good because then it kind of allows us to have sort of some breadth to what we would review and determine.
Discussion does raise one question about when the 45-day demolition delay would start. Now, whether there's a public notice that they're seeking the permit that happens before the hearing, or whether that delay begins from the hearing. If 2B gets, you could have a yes that kicks you into the number one process, then that would need to be addressed just to make sure that it's clear when those 45 days land.
Is that going to have to be part of the code revision anyway?
Into the language. And I think that we would want to be clear, because if it's they apply for a demolition permit and there's a public notice that they've applied for a demolition permit, and that happened, 28 days before the commission meeting, I think when those 45 days start is pretty important to how stringent this requirement is.
It's Michelle. Sean, can you say when you talk about when the 45 days start, can you say what the two choices were again? I'm sorry.
So one would be, I think it really comes down to either from the public hearing or, from when the application is made. Now that I have said these things out loud, it kind of makes more sense that it would be from the public hearing to me.
Yeah.
Because that keeps people from
playing games with when they submit their permit.
Yeah.
In the ordinance, a requirement that the public hearing certainly from the time they submit the application, just so that, you know, there's some hard and fast timelines that everybody has to adhere to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we don't want commission inaction to be something that prevents
right.
an owner from proceeding with their property.
Well, it's Michelle here. I guess, you know, I would be in favor of the 2B and starting the 45 days from the public hearing portion of it.
Okay. Any other thoughts on that?
Sorry, this is Julie again. I would be inclined to agree, but to be honest, I would like to see it again, but I know we're running against a time frame. I'm just a very visual person, and it's easier for me to have comment if I see the changes, but if y'all don't think that that's necessary, then I think we should just make sure we're very clear about what we're putting forward.
Well, that might be a good segue into process, because Sharon, if we want to get on the agenda for a process to even begin, how specific would the commission's recommendation need to be? And would there be an opportunity to fine tune some of the details once staff begins working on it?
Yes. So the first step is we have to get the planning director's approval to add this to the work plan, because he has to make staffing, you know, resource allocation decisions. And then
mm-hmm.
if he approves that, then we would go on to the work plan. We are going to council November 4th. We wouldn't start the work until 2021, so you'd have time to keep refining this, you know, before staff takes it over to work out the details of the code language.
Okay.
So I think the first step is if you vote you want to do this, then Jackie and I take this to the planning director. If he approves it, we put it on the work plan for council to approve. It's a kind of a two-step approval process, which time you can just keep
mm-hmm.
working. This is for the 2021 work plan, so staff wouldn't even touch this until January.
All right, so how much detail do you need in our recommendation to take it to the director and then the council?
I think we just need a summary sentence, summarizing what you want to do and why, and why it's timely.
Okay.
You know, 2 to 3 sentences.
So they wouldn't need to see this?
No.
Or even a set of recommendations?
Correct.
Okay.
I just need a summary of what it is that you're asking for and why, to summarize what that sheet says.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can present that to them in a hearing, in a council work session, actually, on the,
okay.
I think it's the 4th. We need enough information to describe what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's even less information that's here. So,
yeah, you're actually starting to do the work. Yeah.
So we don't have to get all the details exactly right.
No.
All right. So unless there's any other discussion, I think we've got a path forward where we are deciding whether or not to have staff take this through the process to add it to the work plan to update the demolition process for potentially historic resources in Clark County. So is there any further discussion?
I have just one small edit that I would recommend. So I would put additional new process or something to make it, because to me, if a lay person were to read this, they would think the current process is out the window, the new process is the new way forward, and that if they're not joined. So I would make some kind of verbal connection between the two. So we're continuing with our previous current process or current process, and then we have proposals to add on these other steps so it's just clear and nobody has question about those first two yes and no's. That's all.
the words new process to recommended additional process steps.
Mm-hmm.
You would address that. Would that work for you?
Have any specific language, just as long as it's clear and everybody can understand what has been added.
I think there's two things as a subcommittee that we'd like. First, the sense of the commission that we ought to do something in addition. And second, the sense of the commission, whether it's 2A or 2B. And if we can get the sense of that, we can finalize and revise the words and bring them back to the commission at our next meeting with some of these changes recommended by Julie and others.
We need to do that. It sounds like really what we need to vote on is whether or not we want staff to take this conceptually to the director for approval, so that to go through that two-step approval that has to happen on the county side, where the director has to approve adding it to the work plan, the code revisions in general. We don't even have to lay out these specific code revisions, but the code revisions in general need to be approved by the director and then approved by the council to be added to the 2021 work plan. And then we can use this document as the basis for actually tackling those modifications if it gets added to the work plan. I think we can say that's the question before us, is whether or not the commission should direct staff to take this through the county process to get it added to the 2021 work plan to update the demolition process for potentially historic buildings. And if we agree that that's the question, then I'll entertain a motion.
We ask the staff to take forward these recommendations to add to the work plan. Is that what we need to say? Are those the right words? So we put the right words in there. I move that we do that. That we do
it. I'd second that proposal.
All right. So I'll state the motion and make sure that we all agree that that's what the motion was. So the motion is to direct staff to take this issue through the process to get it added to the 2021 work plan.
Yes.
Staff, does that motion make sense to you? Will that accomplish what we need to accomplish?
Yeah.
All right. So is there any discussion? It's the motion made by Don and seconded by Michelle. Do we have any discussion of the motion? All right, hearing none. Sharon, can you take the roll call vote?
Yes. Julie?
Aye.
Sean Dennison?
Aye.
Greg Food?
Yes.
Belly? Belly, you're muted.
Aye.
Okay, Andy Greg?
Aye.
And Michelle? Michelle, you're muted.
These microphones have a bit of a delay in them.
And then John Trost.
Aye.
That's unanimous.
All right, the motion passes unanimously. So Sharon and Jackie, if you need any help with the description, we can certainly help with that, or I can help with that. And we hopefully this will go through. or a little bit at their
could you put together a description for us? Could you put together a short description?
Sure, I can do that with, and yeah, I'll do it and I'll run it by the subcommittee members.
Okay, if we could get that tomorrow, that'd be great.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, that reaches the end of our agenda. So are there any other items for us to address? Hearing none, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone. 6 minutes. You get 6 minutes of your life back.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everyone. And
Jackie,
we'll talk to you next week.
Recording? Are you going to stop recording, Jackie? Okay.